Hey now, we are getting over, and I am Silver King, Adam Silverstein, here to lead you through these hard times. With a special 2-week AEW edition of your favorite professional wrestling podcast. That's right, Getting Over is back once again, and it has been a total whirlwind 2 weeks right here on this podcast. Obviously, we went above and beyond for WWE WrestleMania 40 last week, and there was so much content coming out of WrestleMania. We tried to do the same for you this week while Vintage Chris Vanini was traveling back from Philadelphia, and the Silver King, of course, was traveling to Augusta, Georgia for the 2024 Masters. So our schedule has been all screwed up. We've tried to do the best we possibly could for you, and that is why this AEW edition is not covering just one, but 2 weeks of shows. That's right, the Silver King just recently watched 10 hours of AEW television in one sitting. And folks, let me just simply say, and I would probably say this about WWE as well, that is not something anyone should do, okay? It's just a lot to handle all at one time. So we're going to break all of that down for you on today's show. And yes, I will tease it off the top. I know you all very badly want to hear the Silver King's opinion on the brawl-in footage being shown on Dynamite. And I'll tell you this, Vintage joins the Silver King for a special mini segment as part of this show. I also do have a pretty strong take on what Will Ospreay said about Paul Levesque on that same episode of Dynamite. We're going to get to all of that. Before we do, allow me off the top to remind you that the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast
is all about the five.
So head on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple. Take a little extra time. Leave a 5-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. Please also remember,
I happen to love the number 5.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Overhead. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Sign up. You will get bonus audio, instant reaction to the 4 major wrestling shows, and exclusive news posts every single Friday. Again, buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. One thing I did forget to mention, by the way, earlier this week, is we're using different audio, obviously, because I'm on the road. I don't have my home set up. So if things don't sound as clean or as crisp, or you hear background noise, it's simply because it's different. We're going to be back to our regular equipment, how the show normally sounds, this coming Tuesday with the next WWE edition of the podcast. And I should also mention that if you have not listened to the show since the WWE WrestleMania 40 Night 2 Instant Analysis, and I know everyone listened to it, it's our number one most listened to show of all time. We'll talk about that more on Tuesday. But we have 2 WWE episodes for you this week. We covered the Raw after WrestleMania, WWE Hall of Fame, Bray Wyatt becoming immortal, probably like 25 news items. I mean, we talked a lot of WWE this week, so go back, listen to those 2 episodes. And of course, like I said, we'll have another one for you this coming Tuesday. But with that said, let's go ahead, move to AEW, which is the subject of today's show. Now, as I said, I watched 10 hours of AEW. That's 2 Rampages, 2 Collisions, and 2 Dynamites. And what I've gone ahead and done is organize this in a manner that takes you from storyline to storyline and segments that involve the same people. Now, I know it might come across as a little bit confusing at the beginning, but I promise you it will make sense as we go through the show. The other thing I severely cut down, and I'm sure you are happy about this, especially given the amount of content I'm about to be talking about, I severely cut down on match breakdowns here. We're giving you results. We're talking about storylines, creative decisions, things like that. So with that said, let's go ahead and get to it. And we're, of course, going to start with content that brings us into the Young Bucks FTR story, which, of course, is what we need to kick off the show about. So on Rampage 2 weeks ago, Roderick Strong beat Daddy Magic in an eliminator match. Matt Menard locked in a Boston Crab for a rope break. The Kingdom distracted, backfired, got a cutter on an assisted rope break. Strong caught him off another distraction with a pump, and he got the win. Now, I get their heels, but Strong is a great wrestler who has done absolutely nothing since winning this title. There was really no reason whatsoever to not just have him win this match clean and build his profile. Now, best friend saved him from a post-match attack. they ate stereo low blows from the Young Bucks and a double EVP trigger to end the show. I didn't mind that part so much. On Rampage this past week, Strong beat someone named London Lightning in a 6-minute eliminator. This came after a promo. The entire thing was an immense waste of time. On Collision last week, Kyle O'Reilly beat JD Drake in less than 3 minutes. Undisputed Kingdom, except for Adam Cole and Wardlow, so, you know, 3/5 of the faction, celebrated with him and lifted him in the air. On Collision this week, Rocky Romero said he's not yet won a title in AEW, and there may be rules and rankings, but he just wants an eliminator against Strong. Wardlow was there this time. Undisputed Kingdom all kind of scoffed at the request, and it's going to happen anyway, so it's a thrilling match, of course. It's going to come out of nowhere. In all seriousness, right before we taped the show, it was reported that Rocky has now become the vice president of talent for New Japan Pro Wrestling. This is like one of the most connected guys in the industry at this point. Congrats to him, and I'm not being sarcastic whatsoever. He's just picking up job after job, check after check. Get yours, Rocky. On Dynamite last week, the Young Bucks defeated Best Friends in the tag team tournament. Matt Jackson teased super kicking Sue in the face. She was ringside, I should mention. Instead, he offered her a fist to dap, and she lightly slapped him across the face. I'll admit, that kind of popped me. Best Friends combined for an assisted Strong Zero. Sue gave Tremperetta a kiss on the cheek for motivation, but he got catapulted into a turnbuckle that was exposed way earlier in the match, and the Bucks got the win. They went for a 3-way Best Friends hug. The faces did after the bell. Generally, got to pay extra for that. Only for Trent to hit Orange Cassidy with a Bazaiku knee and then walk out on Chuck Taylor and Sue, ending the segment. I kind of loved all of this. Quality wrestling, decent storytelling, character development for both sides of the match. I'm not even a fan of anyone in this match, but this is how you get me watching a wrestling show. It's also nice to see some edge to one of the Best Friends, because it's been the same tired shit from that entire group for years. This feels at least a little bit fresh. On Collision last week, FTR beat the Infantry in the tag team tournament. They cut a promo backstage and made the Infantry kind of look decent. There was a nearly botched pinning combination as part of a ton of such counters in the match. Commentary twice told us that this was where the Best wrestle. Mercifully, it ended with Shatter Machine after going on for like 14 minutes. I liked how they used the Big Rig tribute with the finisher name. I wonder why they changed it back. I don't know if they've ever answered that question. On Collision last week, Ricky Starks and Big Bill fought Top Flight in the tag team tournament. The heels called this a 1 seed versus a 16 seed. Bill got super kicked outside, and Starks got fully rolled up for like probably a 6 count. The referee stopped the count. Starks got up kind of staggered, ate a tornado DDT for the 1-2-3. Starks music played after the bell, and then production had to change it to Top Flight because commentary had no idea what to do before finally calling the upset. Now, I believe Stark said on social media, this is 2 weeks ago, you have to remember, I think he said he was okay. It looked to me like a stinger watching it live. Shit happens in wrestling, but this is yet another situation where AEW continued a match and did more moves rather than just call it right on the spot. What's that line Taz used back in the day? Oh yeah, sloppy shop. Like, this shit was rough to watch. And then on Collision this week, FTR beat Top Flight in the tag team tournament. Great finish here. Catching dude flying off the ropes for a midair shatter machine. FTR is trying to become the first 3-time champions. Now they're fighting the Bucks, which precedes the next thing we are going to talk about, what you have been waiting for the show. And I did tape this a day earlier because I wanted to make sure I could do it with Vintage. So I'm going to sound a little bit different here, but on the back end, you'll hear me sounding pretty much like I do now. That is just how this podcast recording and editing process had to go this week. AEW during WrestleMania decided to either respond or capitalize, choose your lane, on CM Punk's answers to Brawl and Questions on the MMA Hour by promoting and then actually showing behind-the-scenes CCTV footage of his altercation with Jungle Boy, Jack Perry. Now, when this was first announced, I presumed they were doing it because the footage would contradict what Punk said and therefore prove him to either be a liar, a hypocrite, or both, painting him in a poor light in some way. Because otherwise, I simply could not understand the reasoning nor what would be gained by making such a decision 8 months out after this was settled. This despite him answering questions about it last week. But we are not reactionary here at Getting Over, and as I tweeted, it would have been foolish to cast judgment before both watching the video and determining AEW's purpose for airing it. And it did indeed air Wednesday with a countdown clock pushing the segment and a Young Bucks promo preceding it. The gimmick behind all of it was the Bucks are fighting FTR again, and the last time that happened was All In, so it was opening old wounds. They suggested that they lost that match because they were distracted by an incident on that show, naming Perry, but not Punk. They tried to slip in some snide comment about bashing people publicly being unacceptable, despite plenty of folks in AEW, including Tony Khan himself, doing that to people for years now. And then they played the video, which was without audio because it was CCTV. And what happened on the video was exactly to the letter what Punk said on Ariel Helwani's show. They had a verbal exchange that got heated. They got close to one another. Perry said something, and then Punk first shoved him before Perry like stepped back towards him. So he put him in a choke until Samoa Joe, among others, helped break it up. Then Punk turned and screamed at Tony, though obviously we couldn't hear it because it didn't have audio. In others' accounting of the story, the monitors on Tony's desk got knocked over, and they would have, but Tony actually held them up. So that didn't happen. That was kind of funny to see. But really, the main takeaway from this video was Chris Hero, who was working in gorilla position next to Tony. He left his side. He looked absolutely exasperated at the entire situation, holding his hands over his mouth like he had witnessed a murder or something. Oh, and you also had Malakai Black just stroll by like nothing was happening. AEW cuts back to the commentary table. No one knows what to say. Tony Schiavone, among multiple AEW folks, including Jim Ross, said last week that the company needed to move on from it. Well, Schiavone looked immediately disappointed and embarrassed that this aired. He was despondent with a look of like disappointment on his face as he tried and failed to convince them that it was a bad idea. That's my assumption. Fans in the arena lightly chanted CM Punk. And I say lightly because there were like 3,000 people there and only a few seemed to even give a shit. And then later in the show, during a match that involves Kazuchika Okada and Pac, two of the top talents in the company, fans chanted for CM Punk. They were protest chanting, great wrestlers putting on a good match. And this wasn't in Chicago or a city like that. So this was an absolute clusterfuck. Now, FTR hit the ring in the segment after the video. They were all furious and angry, saying that AEW shouldn't be focusing on the past, but the future, called the Bucks pathetic little bitches and said they were going to beat them for all the people in the locker room who go to work for the fans. The concept was that the Bucks may have built the foundation of AEW. They're going to put a roof on it. And they did get FTR chants from the crowd because, as usual, the promo style of Dax Harwood, especially him in particular, can rouse people to back them. So to a degree, did this help FTR get cheered and help the Bucks get booed? Sure. But it certainly wasn't necessary for either to be accomplished given, you know, FTR are already faces and the Bucks are already heels. Folks, this completely backfired. I'm not sure it could have gone any worse for AEW doing this on its own accord, coming out of WrestleMania, as WWE is getting praised more than it has been in decades. There was no chance for this to do anything but backfire. I have no earthly idea what Tony Khan was thinking. The legend of this was far more compelling than the reality. And the truth is that AEW could have said whatever they wanted to say about the situation, knowing they were the only ones with access to the footage and could never be disproven unless they showed it. Really, if they released this after All In on that Dynamite, they probably would have gotten some sympathy. Instead, what Tony accomplished was proving that the guy who says, tell me when I'm telling lies, was in fact not telling lies. And now, as an unintended consequence of proving Punk was factual in that retelling of the story, Tony has basically lent credence to everything Punk has said in that interview. You know, the one where he called Tony a clown and then shorthand said,
you are not serious people.
Now, further evidence of that comes if we recall what Tony said on Dynamite after Brawl In, when he claimed Punk lunged at him, and it was the first time he was scared for his life. Let me repeat, scared for his life at a wrestling show. Now, let me be clear. Punk did move towards him out of anger, but in no way does the footage show that he was looking to physically harm Tony. Plus, there was an entire table and monitors between both of them. He would never have gotten there. Now, putting myself in Tony's shoes, if a man of Punk's size with his training came at me in that manner, would I jump back? Absolutely. He would kick my ass, and I would put myself in position to be prepared in case I had to defend myself. But would I have been scared for my life? No. And would I have gone on national television and told people that I was scared for my life? Abso-fucking-lutely not. I said it at the time, I'll repeat it now. That's a billionaire son interpreting a moment he's probably never faced in his life and taking it to an absurd level of extreme just to get sympathy. Because who would dare move towards a guy like that, you know? Brock Lesnar throwing the Universal title at Vince McMahon, that was more frightening than this. And he was like 10 feet away. Though, if we're being fair, I guess Lesnar brushing his teeth is more frightening than things that most people do. Now, this did give credence to Tony firing Punk, but that was not a decision anyone disagreed with in the first place. So it sure as shit did not need support 8 months later. And let's not forget, Brawl In doesn't happen if Punk was fired like he should have been after Brawl Out. and Brawl Out does not happen if Tony had been in any position to manage people with a level of skill, because this entire conflict should have been resolved well before that show. The only reasonable explanation for why Tony did this is to pop a rating for Dynamite. It got 819,000 viewers and a 0.31 demo. Certainly increases from the last 2 weeks, but pretty much in line with their highest rated episode since February. Nothing special, certainly not a good enough reason. Don't worry though, he parroted that on social media, despite it being probably a 1 week bump that will surely go away, if not next week, then soon. FTR's retort was actually well done. It allowed for the other perspective that most share on the situation to be put on TV. But here's the problem. The segment basically placed the Bucks and AEW against FTR and CM Punk. No, FTR was not out there representing Punk, but this would not have been a situation that involved them otherwise. That's a major problem. Because why? What have we talked about for years on here? One of the unique traits that AEW possessed for so long was that it was the babyface company in a sea of heels, namely WWE. Fans chant AEW, they buy AEW merch, they praise Tony for saving the industry, as ridiculous as it ever was to say that. Yet here you have the babyface in the story being someone who works for the competition, and the heel being the company, which has an image already in the middle of being eroded just due to recent decisions made by Khan. Nobody who liked Punk thought less of him coming out of this. In fact, it's possible they only gained respect for him. Nobody who hated Punk thought any different of him after this. In fact, they may have even seen their hatred reduced a bit because the footage proved his story to be accurate. And this was proven to be a total and utter failure because AEW reacted to the perception of Punk telling the truth by using DMCA copyright claims to take down all social media postings involving the footage, including some that overlaid interview audio on top of the video. They also didn't include the footage on their own YouTube channel. What does that tell you? When have you ever seen a company make a huge deal about something and then not want people to see it? Holy shit, man. Well, here's what I can tell you. The number one trend on Twitter after this segment was not hashtag AEW Dynamite or anyone involved in that company. It was CM Punk, and it was people clowning AEW for posting this footage, which meant no one benefited more from it than Punk and WWE by proxy, because they will be served with footage of Punk and Drew McIntyre from Raw and all the other Punk stuff from over the weekend. The gimmick, any press is good press, that can be true in some situations. It's not universal, and it certainly did not work here. The only way this would have worked is if the video countered the narrative that Punk shared. It only confirmed it, and it likely emboldened him. It was a desperate ploy for attention, and it worked. Unfortunately, it got the wrong kinds of attention. Punk posted a George W. Bush mission accomplished meme. Everyone laughed. Cedric Alexander, the husband of Big Swole, who you'll remember Tony insulted on New Year's Eve after she left the company, laughed at him. Sean Spears, Corey Graves, Danhausen, independent talent, they took shots. It's one thing for like tribal WWE fans or WWE superstars to laugh at you. It is another thing when your own talent is frustrated and the entire landscape of the wrestling community is thumbing their noses at you, because they are realizing what so many wrestlers have already learned. If you do not leave AEW on good terms, Tony has no qualms about trying to make you look bad. And even if he fails, he's pretty much done that every single time. It's not about AEW. It's about him. Remember when CM Punk did that promo on Raw after returning and he said, "I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to make money." And everyone figured, well, you know, that tracks, because you didn't make any friends in AEW and you're only back in WWE for the money. What's amazing is he actually did make friends in AEW, and he is making friends in WWE. Yep. To a person, folks, in WWE, they have nothing but great things to say about this guy's disposition. He's helping out in NXT. Think about how many people, even in AEW, don't have crosswords to say about him. Now, I saw people comparing this to WCW 2000 on Wednesday. Those people didn't watch WCW 2000, which was as bad as wrestling booking has ever been. But was this WCW late 1998 into 1999? Yeah, there were some elements of that. Let's not forget, AEW had the opportunity to lean into this drama and capitalize off of it twice while Punk was employed there, at least once after Brawl Out, and they failed to do so. None of this, by the way, is even mentioning the hypocrisy of AEW posting this footage after Tony sent Adam Copeland's ass out there, edge of all people, to cut a rah-rah promo last week. Cope and others all week said it was time to move on. Time to get past this, to not feed into the tribalism. And here Tony goes, not just airing the footage, but spending 4 segments on this 2-hour TV show making WWE references. Now, we'll get to the others in a minute. But what Tony accomplished here is opening a wound that was previously closed, telling his locker room that the product they're putting on TV is not as important as what Punk says in a third-party media interview because it hurt his feelings. The only way releasing this would have made any sense would have been to do it on social media, like leak it to a journalist. But even then, all people would have done is shrugged and said, I guess Punk told the truth. Instead, this is absolute clown show shit. It reeked of utter desperation. 8 months after this was put to bed, CM Punk is again the talk of AEW. Not Samoa Joe or Swerve Strickland or Tony Khan or Kazuchika Okada or Mercedes Moné. CM Punk. TV time dedicated to a guy who is a babyface in the other company. When Punk was burying WWE, never in a million years would they have addressed it on Raw or something similar. Could you imagine WWE dedicating significant TV time to answering a competitor in a post-WCW world when they aren't fighting for their lives? This was straight up embarrassing. Tony should be ashamed for thinking this was a good idea, whether he or the Bucks conceptualized it. Don't forget, this came on the back of Khan releasing a bunch of wrestlers, which he said he would never do, and then openly parroting in a press conference that he spent more than a year's salary for a wrestler on a Lynyrd Skynyrd song to be played during the Ring of Honor show just a couple days later than those releases. You cannot spend 5 years taking shots at WWE and allow your talent to do it on your program for the same time period if you are so thin-skinned where Punk answering legitimate questions in a third-party media interview is going to send you into such extremes where you use TV time across the next 2 weeks to counter it, where WWE deciding to load up an NXT show after your program moves head-to-head with them and you load up your show before they even do that because you want to maintain your ratings and not be embarrassed, and then have that lead to you calling your competitors bald assholes. There is no way that the best response to Punk giving his honest take on a part of his life was publishing the only video in existence that shows the dude winning a real fight. There's no doubt in my mind that Tony was hoping to like garner the same reaction from this that he did Copeland's promo last week on AEW when they posted hashtag Thank you, AEW, on screen. And Tony took to Twitter thanking fans for supporting him and the company. He literally tweeted that night, quote, "It means a lot to hear those AEW chants right now, as if something devastating happened and he needed cheering up." Well, I guess that's why he sent one of his shiny toys out there to make himself feel better. Because don't forget, folks, stand up for WWE is bad. Stand up for AEW is okay. Why? Because to be AEW is to constantly be under attack. What a joke. So here's the kudos Tony wants. I'm happy to provide them. Congratulations, Tony. You played yourself. Congrats on getting an injured wrestler starring in another company cheered and chanted at your own show. Congrats for showing your ass to your talent and your fans and folks who have stuck up for you. And that is a group that includes yours truly. I defended Tony against some of Punk's comments last week. Congrats on making Copeland look even more foolish than he already looked for his promo. Hey, at least he's having the most fun in his quarter century career. Congrats for taking the moral and emotional edge that you had on WWE and absolutely flushing it down the toilet over the past 2 years. Congrats on making Punk even more popular and likely turning off a segment of your own audience in the process. Congrats on embarrassing yourself, your company, your locker room, and even your staunchest defenders who have been with you from the very beginning. Congrats on burning down your house to get rid of a spider. Congrats on making one of the greatest unforced errors in the history of professional wrestling.
Look, this whole thing was incredibly stupid. There was almost no way the way it played out was going to be beneficial to AEW, and you're right. Nobody's really defending this. Nobody has watched that video and be like, oh, well, you know, Tony Khan had a point, blah, 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 blah. Like, it looks completely childish. And I don't want to say Punk comes out looking good, because he does start the physicality. He did deserve to get fired. Two backstage incidents when you get physical with other wrestlers and you lunge at your boss. Yeah, he was right to get fired. We said it at the time. We said it the first time. And we'll say that now. So I wouldn't say Punk comes out looking good, but I'll say Tony Khan definitely comes out looking bad, most notably because of him saying scared for his life or feared for his life or whatever. There was no reason to say that. I have no idea why he came out in front of the crowd and said that. He got jeered when he said it in front of the live audience. It's just bizarre to do that. If he doesn't say that, I think we look at this whole thing a little bit differently. Everybody agreed Punk should be fired. That point, like, nobody was like surprised, and instead we come all the way around to do this where now you've suddenly put sympathy on CM Punk. Now there was no way AEW could win this narrative or come out looking good from this whole thing. Tony Khan did not start this. CM Punk started this last night by saying what he said. Now agree with it, disagree with it, whatever, it's not like AEW brought this up first, but once that happened, you and I got a whole thing last week. I thought Edge coming out and saying what he said, hey, I love AEW, we're moving forward here, cool, that's fine with it. You hated that, but I thought that was fine. I thought there was no good way to respond. I thought that was the best possible way to do that. But now to come with this a week after Edge did that makes him look like a chump and makes you look even more childish for doing this a week and a half after Punk made his comments. It's all incredibly stupid. Nobody's really defending AEW. No one's defending Tony Khan in that. It put the wrestlers in a really difficult situation. Credit to FTR for doing the best with it that they could. This will go down as one of the more embarrassing moments, I think, in pro wrestling and in a industry that has a lot of them. I wouldn't say the biggest mistake or whatever.
I didn't say biggest. I said one of the greatest. Unfortunately, just like you're saying, one of the most embarrassing.
Yeah, I don't think week to week it will have any real impact on the company. I don't think suddenly a lot of people are going to watch. I don't think suddenly a lot of people are not going to watch. I think we all just had a good hearty laugh at Tony Khan over it, and then people will move on to what they're doing. Because really, AEW and WWE are their own universes, and their fan bases do not seem to cross over as much as we would think, considering the AEW references that CM Punk and Cody make that don't get reactions in WWE crowds, you know. And like, I get AEW making WWE references. I'm totally fine with punching up. I don't really have an opinion one way or the other, whether it's good or bad or whatever. I understand it. I do think it's pretty hilarious that the guy who smashed a Triple H throne at one of the first AEW shows just won the main event of WrestleMania and hugged Triple H.
And ended one of the longest championship reigns, the fourth longest championship reign in company's history.
Yeah.
1,316 days.
So this idea that you say things about Triple H and you can't get over them, like, that's, people get back together. Now, what Will Ospreay said was, we'll get to that. That was a lot, I think, worse than what Cody did with the throne. But I'm totally fine with that happening. I think people just kind of need to be more adults about all of this. And yeah, AEW looks bad for doing it. Didn't need to do that. Not to say there's anything they could have responded with that would have helped, but this was pretty much the worst possible way to go about it.
To take another, you know, angle on what you said though, Chris, it's okay if you punch up if you're the competitor brand. That, I agree with that. But you can't do that for 5 years on television and then lose your absolute shit when someone responds back to you.
Agree.
Or makes a comment about you in a third-party media interview. Now, look, WWE
third-party approved. Asterisk, yes.
No, it's not third. He's a third party. But my point is, look, surely WWE approved, you know, Punk going on that show, and they knew that Ariel was going to ask those questions. No one's stupid here. We're not making assumptions that wasn't the case. But CM Punk is also an individual who gave the answers of his experience. He honestly retold what happened to him there. And if you're going to counter that in some way, then you really only have two options. One of them is to say, that's not true. Here's my perspective. Do your own third-party media interview. Call Ariel, who would have been 1,000% acceptable accepting, I should say, of having Tony on his show. Or if Tony doesn't trust Ariel and he wants to go somewhere else, go somewhere else, let them interview and actually speak on it. But Tony has also had numerous opportunities to speak about this, and he's no commented people to death every single time. So you can't do that over and over again and then have someone out there who you know is a loose cannon in CM Punk, who is not on an NDA, and then expect him to just be tight-lipped about it because of what reason? Loyalty to you? Or what reason did he have to not answer those questions? He didn't have any. He honestly told what happened to him. And then what Tony did was, I guess, try to capitalize off of it. But all he did was prove that every single thing CM Punk said was accurate, at least in terms of what was on the video. But again, as I said earlier, once you prove that that stuff is factual, then it leads a third party, a viewer or a person following on social media to say, well, if he wasn't lying about that,
right,
then maybe Tony really doesn't have any control of this company. He must have been telling the truth about that as well. He put himself in the worst possible position he could have. And that's why, Chris, it was an unforced error, because they did not need to do this. They answered last week with Copeland. I mocked them. You said, hey, Silver King, you know, maybe you're being a little too harsh. And I said, hey, you know what? Maybe I am. Maybe I'm not. That's how I feel, right? But then we circle back 7 days later here, and they just threw what Copeland did out the window into the trash.
Yep.
They said, oh, you want to talk about not being tribal and moving on and being good about professional wrestling and just enjoying it? Bump that. We're going to go soil ourselves and soil everything that we had you say 7 days later. If you're Copeland, you got to be pissed the F off at that.
Yeah, no, I would as well. And I guess as we kind of wrap this part up, at least, I really hate the tribalism of all this from the fans, particularly. Like, if anything, Cody Rhodes and what he did this weekend is the example of why it's important to have AEW and WWE together. So someone can go to somewhere else, create a company, go to another company and continue to wrestle, make money and get better and come back and be a big star, or go to the other company and do that. So it's one reason I've always been annoyed by just the tribalism.
Chris,
of it. Yeah.
Could you imagine if Tony took the high road and he said, he put something out, let's say Monday, congratulations to former AEW founder Cody Rhodes on finishing his story and winning a championship that he sought for his entire career. Doesn't even have to mention WWE. What if he took that high road? Do you know, and forget sympathy, do you know how much praise he would get for being above it all and going to that extreme? People would be saying, oh, wow, Tony really is past it. Good for him. Let's support AEW. Yeah. Instead, it's the exact opposite.
And Cody's never said anything bad about AEW. Just
not a word.
Would
on
only,
purpose. On
would
purpose
only say he had a personal issue. Won't say what that was. Brandy's said she's had some concerns about the company. But like he's not bad-mouthing the company. He has friends there. He's still friends with the Young Bucks. Like, you can be professional about all of this type of stuff. And he's the perfect example of it. You know, Dustin Rhodes tweeted over the weekend, finished the story and whatnot. You know, like, Ricky Starks was there with Mama Rhodes at WrestleCon doing the Dusty Rhodes Foundation stuff. Like, they're all in it together. And you're right. If Tony had just said, like, hey, congratulations, Cody, you know, happy for you, you know, AEW's, you laid a great foundation to AEW. The future's bright for wrestling. Like, boom. Like, it's so easy to do that.
So
and
easy.
You know where we got that, sort of? Michael Cole crediting Sting for his retirement just a couple weeks ago. Boom, that was all you needed to do. And McAfee said it was a great match or whatever. Like, that's it's all it's got to be. Punk just...
And by the way, as part of that interview...
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you. As part of that interview cycle, Sting, he didn't trash WWE, but he did candidly say, look, what happened there, it wasn't the way I wanted to end my career. I didn't get the match I wanted. Mm-hmm. There were things that I wanted to do that they said I could, but ultimately I didn't get to. Like, he was critical of WWE. Imagine if they, like, said, hey, you know, this guy who lost to Seth Rollins, retired over in that other company, you know, screw that guy. Like, that's the equivalent of this. Like, them trashing Sting because he retired, because Sting wasn't a WWE guy. All they have is some footage of him and one WrestleMania match where Triple H and D-Generation X beat him in NWO, which didn't really make sense on its own. But they could have trashed him. They didn't. They said, hey, Michael Cole, if you want to go congratulate him, Pat McAfee, if you want to say the match was sick, go ahead and say it, but let's quickly move on and go back to our product. They didn't spend time trashing what a guy from AEW said from a third-party interview on their television product.
It's just CM Punk just brings the worst out of everybody at all times. Fans, promoters, himself.
It's amazing.
Everything. It's just what he does. It's why he's captivating. And we have yet another chapter in the career of CM Punk.
So we move off of that. And don't worry, we will come back to that episode of Dynamite. But for now, we move off of that and go to Collision. There was a Kazuchika Okada video package voiced by Nigel McGuinness. Remember, Okada debuted, wrestled a couple times, then went back to Japan. And AEW faked him being backstage a couple weeks ago before he completely missed, I think, at least 1 week, maybe two total weeks. Package was actually well done, all things considered. On Collision, Pat beat a jobber in less than 3 minutes with Black Arrow and the Brutalizer. Then he cut a promo saying he was going to prove he was the best wrestler on earth, and he challenged Okada. It was fine. On Dynamite, Okada beat a jobber in 1 minute. Then he took a mic and accepted the challenge in English, and he might be taking lessons. He was actually not that bad. Pac went out to confront, so the Bucks attacked, and fans loudly chanted CM Punk. FTR made the save, but the heels came out on top of the entire segment. Okada slammed Pac with a chair right to the side of the head. I believe Matt was wearing a Jack Perry scapegoat shirt under his jacket, so obviously he's going to return to AEW, probably a Dynasty, and join the Elite. This was just further proof that that was such a poor decision, such an epic fail. You got them chanting CM Punk loudly in one of the main segments on your show. Moving to Collision last week. The TNT Championship, Adam Copeland defending in a Cope Open against an opponent to be announced. This began the show. Cope did another babyface feel-good promo, only for out of absolutely nowhere, Matt Cardona to answer the challenge. Now, this is a real open challenge. This is what I'm talking about, folks. Fans popped huge. They chanted, holy shit. Extended period, actually. Now, obviously, this was a real dream match for Cardona, a former edgehead. Cardona kicked the ropes into Cope's crotch and impaler DDT for a false finish. Cope countered a spear with radio silence. Sorry, he countered a spear and he countered radio silence, which is the Rough Rider. Hit a buckle bomb and a Liger bomb. Cardona countered a spear with silence, but Copeland countered him back for a 1-2-3. And Cardona kicked out at like 3.5. I'm not sure what that was about, but this was really fun. One of the best segments on AEW across the 2 weeks we're talking about here. And you know what? Now that I'm thinking back on it, I think it was the best segment across the entire 10 hours that I watched. 3.75 stars B+. Like I said, this is not just a real open challenge and that someone was not announced ahead of time. It was a legitimate surprise that made you happy that you tuned in as a viewer. Now, you can't do it every single time, but you can have surprising challengers, even as part of the roster. That's what open challenges should be. The lights went out after the bell. Malakai Black appeared to holy shit chance. I mean, the guy does this every single time he shows up. I don't know that it's holy shit worthy. Maybe they were just talking about the potential matchup between the two. Copeland played it like he was tentative. Black started dribbling goo out of his mouth. Buddy Matthews attacked, so Mark Briscoe made the save. Then Eddie Kingston saved, and everyone disappeared. I loved every part of this until the saves came from just random folks who were somehow ready for a surprise attack. Not abnormal in wrestling, but I would have liked to have seen Cope get his ass beat by Malakai. That would have been more interesting for me. Come to learn here that Briscoe and Kingston were fighting for the ROH title. And I get they're both faces and compadres, but they're teaming up in AEW despite fighting in Ring of Honor. You have to remember this was before that match. And this became a trios match at Dynasty, meaning Copeland is not going to be defending his title on that show. He's going to be teaming with Kingston and Briscoe against the House of Black. That is not a pay-per-view match. That's a TV match. What are we doing here? So on Collision last week, Christopher Daniels, yeah, somehow Christopher Daniels made his way into the show, had the most corny, dramatic, sudden turnaround to cut a promo saying he's an AEW original and he wants to beat Black on Rampage. Black won that last Friday with his finisher, obviously. Now, if CD wanted to fight him so bad and so randomly, why didn't he just save Copeland earlier in the show? I asked for AEW to make at least some effort to build matches, and credit to them for literally doing the bare minimum, I guess. I'll go into the breakdown of which matches had storyline and which one didn't at the end. I forgot to do it at the beginning. We'll talk about it before we get out of here. At least when stuff like this happens in WWE or NXT, they create a conflict. They don't just have someone come out and say, I want to fight you. Like, this is literally the bare minimum, and I may have to create a separate category for that. On Collision this week, House of Black beat Daniels, Brian Keith, and Matt Sydal in 10 minutes. But he got the fall for a change. That was nice. Copeland's music hit. Black went to face him on the stage, and he instead attacked the rest of House. Briscoe and FTR ran out after. Then the Bucks came out for a brawl with FTR and Cope spearing King and Matthews. So much for him looking strong. One night, Black and Copeland stared off before Malakai dipped out. This was just stuff that happened. On Dynamite last week, Willow Nightingale was excited she had a TBS title match at Dynasty. She got a bunch of solid, cheap pops as part of a really exceptional, actually, babyface promo talking about overcoming doubts about herself and the fans supporting her, how much it means to her, and why she's successful because of them. I loved her promo. Stokely Hathaway then put her over as impressing the world when Mercedes Moné interrupted with her song, prompting CEO chants. She said she would fight the winner of the match with Julia Hart. So basically, she has not been physically cleared, and she may not fight all the way until Double or Nothing. On Rampage, Layla Hirsch was back telling us that she's been beating people up in ROH, but we don't know because we don't watch, which is completely accurate, Layla. But now she's back in AEW, she wants to fight the best, and she wants Julia in an open house challenge. Hart later accepted. And if you're Julia, my question is, why do you accept this knowing you have a title match coming up in 2 weeks? This is a constant problem in AEW, where they set number one contenders for title matches, yet you have people defend or do eliminator matches ahead of those title fights with obvious outcomes and boring results. Clearly, they're not going to lose those matches before they go and defend the title. The next time Julia spoke was on Collision. She said nothing about Hirsch and only focused on Willow and Mercedes, but she technically didn't say anything new about them either. And this was one of like two or three times over these shows that Julia did a taped promo that said and did nothing. It advanced nothing. On Dynamite, Copeland defended his title, TNT title, against Penta El Zero Miedo. Penta got his first real promo in I don't know how long. On Dynamite the week prior, he challenged Cope for the title because he's an AEW original. So this is Penta and Christopher Daniels, and there might have been a third person, making challenges. I guess it was probably Dustin Rhodes part of it because they're AEW originals. It's just like, what sense does this make? It's just stupid. The match graphic was put on screen seconds after the challenge because that's standard. Then on Collision, Penta beat Commander to get him a win before the match, which is also standard. It was actually a blast, as one would expect. They're both very skilled. 3.75 stars, B+ on that. Now, this wound up being a three-segment match, Copeland and Penta. It went 21 minutes. Copeland obviously retained, and he did so by spearing Penta, who was flying at him off a counter that led to an Irish whip into the ropes. It was a beautiful, sudden finish to keep Penta strong and make it look like Copeland skirted by. This is what I always talk about for AEW. Come up with creative but legitimate finishes if you want to keep folks strong. Don't just rely on someone passing out. Really, the only gripe here is that Penta stays losing every significant singles match across his entire AEW career. But I didn't expect him to win either. Now that I'm thinking back, despite the Copeland promo being one of the things I hated most over the last couple of weeks, his two matches are actually the things I liked the most over the last couple of weeks. Now, the lights went out after the bell because, of course, that's the storyline they're doing. Julia appeared as a distraction so Brody King could attack Cope from behind. Willow made the save. And it was cool to see the storylines mixed up, even if it did make it tough for me to break it down for you in this 2 week review of AEW. Later on Dynamite, Briscoe and Kingston had a friendly backstage, you know, moment, despite the former beating the latter for the ROH title over WrestleMania weekend. I'll try to get to that next week. Copeland made sure they were all good for Dynasty in their trios match. Willow said she had an idea. So Stoke popped in. He said Cope should defend his title against her. And I kind of want to see that match now, but obviously that's not going to happen. So they did a random Cope and Willow versus King and Julia booking. I'm down to see it. It was a fun segment, all things considered. Later on Dynamite, Mercedes did a sit-down interview where there were constant zooms in and out, camera shifts. I almost threw up watching this on a laptop. It was like a high school kid directed this segment, someone who was given a camera for the first time. Anyway, Moné put over Julia and Willow, saying her injury against Nightingale in that NJPW strong match was the worst moment of her entire career. I mean, my guess is that it would probably be when she walked out of WWE Raw shortly before the show, but okay, maybe this was worse. But oh my God, holy shit, the cameras keep zooming. I actually wrote this note twice. I'm realizing it now. Suddenly the lights went out. Mercedes did some really weak screams, and then laid on the floor, lightly touching her head and moaning. Like, what in the blue hell was this? This is the person I'm supposed to believe is an actress? Now, clearly Mercedes, as I just mentioned a couple moments ago, is not ready to wrestle from a health standpoint, so they continue to use her in the worst possible way, talking segments. And now they've done an attack to temporarily write her off because they have nowhere else to go in the story. My Lord. on Rampage last week, there was a vignette for The Righteous that was the same as every vignette you've ever seen for The Righteous. These remain the most interesting part of what they do on TV, mostly because when they get in the ring, they always lose. And that's exactly what happened on Collision that week when Bryan Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli, and Katsuyori Shibata beat them and Lance Archer in 17 minutes, 3.5-star match. I'd have spent more time on breaking it down if it mattered at all in storyline, but it didn't. Most notable is that Shibata won with the PK, appropriately so, because he had taken falls to Danielson and Will Ospreay previously. On Collision this past week, Claudio beat the Butcher. He is definitely being used better in AEW, doing almost exactly what he did in WWE, save for an ROH title reign that no one really cared about. On Dynamite last week, now look, we already talked about Copeland's bullshit promo that opened the show, both in totality and again briefly at the start of this episode, so I'm just going to move past that. I'm not going to talk about it again. I'm going to go to the booked match that opened the show, which was Ospreay against Powerhouse Hobbs, because they're both in the Don Callis family, even though Callis hasn't been seen with Ospreay since he joined AEW full-time. Ospreay won in 13 minutes. It was a 4-star A-minus match, probably. He'd had better matches against big men that I've seen, but this was a fun-as-hell opener for a show. Ospreay hit a beautiful sky twister. Hidden Blade got the win. Hobbs was pissed after the match. Callis separated them, and it was never followed up upon this past week on Dynamite. After that match on Dynamite 2 weeks ago, Danielson entered to stare down Ospreay. Then he beat Archer in about 15 minutes. Hit a couple head kicks. Pair of bazaiku knees, got the win. Now, certainly not going to complain about good wrestling, but the first 45 minutes of that show 2 weeks ago was two matches, limited storytelling, and this entire feud has them just been wrestling other people and having video packages. On Collision, Brian did have an interesting interview with Renee Paquette, but all of his answers were about like evolving as a performer and wanting to test himself against Ospreay. So we didn't learn anything new or get any deeper. Then Ospreay was interviewed expressing confidence against Danielson because he conquered Japan and Brian wrestles a similar style. We also got a fight video package between them and Dynamite this week. And I get that the story is simple. Like, who is better in the ring? It's easy. But why not add a little bit of juice to it and create something more intricate between them? Ospreay, at the end of his promo, literally said something along the lines of, the story is the two best wrestlers fighting where the best wrestle. They're both the best, but neither has a title. And they're wrestling just to do it because they're the best. Again, I'm psyched for the match. I love both of these guys. I don't even dislike the way it's being built strongly. They're spending a lot of time on it. I just wish they were spending time doing things that mattered. Now, maybe this is going to be a situation where Brian wins and the story comes on the back end for the rematch and the trilogy. I just need more than we are good, so it's going to be good. Does that make sense? Okay, so look, let's get to Ospreay's promo that everyone's talking about. So he said he asked Tony Khan for TV time because he wanted to address a rumor that he's afraid of the grind. Maybe 1/3, I would say, of the crowd reacted to that. Maybe 50% if I'm being generous. Most had no idea what he was talking about. Ospreay countered the assertion saying that he's traveling back and forth to the UK weekly and he's delivering some of the best wrestling matches in the world. So that means he's grinding. He said he normally wouldn't rise to that type of bait, but since the guy who said it is only in his position because he was grinding on the boss's daughter, then he paused to look behind him to get approval from the fans. Renee, if you look to the left of him, you know, screen right, looks disgusted holding the microphone. He said he was not in a position to say that about Ospreay. Ospreay said it was just a little jab back, and you don't throw stones at an assassin with a machine gun. And then he talked about Brian. He actually got to, you know, the storyline that he's there to talk about for his television show. So let me tell you a story about how and why this promo came to pass before I even start on Ospreay. So Paul Levesque was on the Pat McAfee show, and he was asked about his roster. As part of a much longer answer to a question, he said something that was clipped and posted on Twitter by those fucking horrendous engagement accounts with those accounts, not Triple H, including Ospreay's name and immediately assuming that Triple H was talking about him. Now, what's interesting about that is those accounts purposefully cut off the end of Levesque's answer. And I'm going to play it for you now. As I play it, I'm going to pause where they stopped. I'm going to say this is where they stopped. And then I'm going to play the rest of it for you. And I will repeat that this was done purposefully. It was left out the end part to generate tribalism and therefore engagement for their accounts. So here you go.
It's a different game. It's a different world. If they're not here to be all in on this, Like, when I see people that come out of, you know, trying to make it, and then they pick the job where they go, well, they work less, the schedule's lighter. All right, then I'm glad I didn't get you.
And then here's the extra 7 seconds.
Okay. Because if you're not in it for the grind, at that point early in your career, you have no business being here.
So now that you've heard what he said, and look, I don't know whether Will heard the back part of that, but it probably doesn't matter because he almost certainly reacted to assumptions made by other people that simply became fact because they were repeated so frequently. Now, look, is it possible that Paul Levesque was talking directly about Will Ospreay? Absolutely. It's also possible that he made a general comment about young wrestling talent or someone else entirely as an individual that was in his head. And let's be clear about something. In a vacuum, what Levesque said is asinine. The goal of anyone should be to work as little as possible and make as much money as possible. The whole grind mentality where people push that on you is idiotic. Now, I'm not saying that people who grind are idiots. I grind my ass off for work, and I grind my ass off for this podcast as well. So that's my mentality. But I would never tell someone else. It needs to be their mentality. So I didn't like Paul's answer just on the general merit of it, but also he's a hiring manager for his company. And if those are the types of employees or independent contractors that he wants to hire, that's also his right. And he gave an answer that was honest to the way he grew up in the industry and what he believes. What I disliked more, though, than Paul's answer was Ospreay's promo. Because look, anyone who listens to this show or knows me as a wrestling fan is well aware that I am a massive fan of Ospreay. I have been putting this guy over weekly since he got to AEW, and obviously I've talked about him for years just for his incredible work in New Japan. None of that is changing based on what I'm about to say now. Still a fan of Will the Wrestler. And I'm mostly a fan of him as the person too. Seems to have a really good head on his shoulders. And outside of that stupid feud with Seth Rollins like 5 years ago, seems to be a chill and cool guy. I would love to get a pint with him. But what disgusts me is that Ospreay has been in AEW all of a couple of weeks. And he's already been roped into this tribalistic bullshit. And if you're going to say, well, that's because Levesque said something about him, again, I give you the credence of maybe they did, but he still responded this way on AEW television. And I truly do not believe Levesque was speaking directly about him. But the fact that this promo happened at all was bad. The fact that it happened one or two segments after the Brawl In video and the FTR promo was so eye-rolling. And then you had Renee's reaction. It told the entire story. This is a woman who has a lot of friends in WWE. And despite John Moxley's distaste for the company, and maybe that's changed with Vince McMahon gone, I don't know. I would venture to guess she doesn't really have bad feelings about Levesque. I don't know for sure. It's just a guess. And here she is, forced to stand out there doing this interview. But she probably didn't know exactly what he was going to say. And I think her reaction there was completely genuine. But she has to stand there while Ospreay makes, as one of our listeners at Cam Penny's put it, a sexually degrading comment about Stephanie McMahon using an insult that is two decades old to discredit Triple H. Who wrote this shit? Billy Gunn? And you have Ospreay claiming that Levesque doesn't know about grinding, a guy who worked 300 days a year for decades to make it in this business. Would he have gotten the exact same opportunities if he didn't marry Stephanie? I mean, probably not. But are they married because he was sleeping his way to the top? I don't think you go and have multiple kids with someone and stick by their side through a heart condition and remain as close as they have remained for all of this time if it's a marriage of convenience. This is from a guy in Ospreay, by the way, who's in his own very unique relationship and trying to do what's right by his girl. So he knows the struggles of stuff like this. What a fucking shitty thing to say to try to generate some heat. Both Will and Hunter have worked their asses off. Why is Ospreay getting his mind warped by either people in the locker room, fans online, or even Tony Khan himself? And if you're Tony, knowing that you're pulling this Brawl In bullshit a segment earlier, how can you think it's a good idea to make half of your show about WWE? What does Copeland think about this? I forgot. He's having the time of his life. My bad. What is Malachi Black and Buddy Matthews and all those ex-WWE guys who know and like Hunter, some of whom were considering going back? What do they think about this? What do they think about Tony taking half of a show 2 weeks out from his next pay-per-view and spending it on WWE? Why is AEW again wasting time responding to something from a third-party interview on their own TV show? And yes, I know in this case they were at WWE World, so it's a lot less third-party than the Ariel Helwani. I'm just saying, I'm not mad at Will. He didn't lose me as a fan or supporter. But holy shit, man, I am disappointed. On Dynamite last week, there was a contract signing between Samoa Joe and Swerve Strickland. Joe had an incredible line about Diddy. He signed the contract. He's top tier on the mic. I've maintained that forever. Swerve said Joe is a killer, but he is as well. He took a cheap shot and tried to choke Joe with a chain, but he no-sold it, headbutted him, and then used the chain to punch him in the face repeatedly in the corner. Swerve bladed, crawled over to the contract and said, "I love this shit," and signed it in blood by first rubbing the pen on his forehead and then wiping blood all over the paper. Joe ran back in, Swerve opened his arms, Joe kicked him in the balls, and then hit a Uranagi through the table. I'm into this feud because I like both of these guys as wrestlers and promos and characters. The segment in a vacuum was hot as hell. That said, I've been struggling to buy Swerve as a babyface for months now because he never had a redemption arc. The entire reason he's a face is because fans wanted to cheer for him. The entire reason Hangman Page is a heel is because fans decided they liked Swerve more, and Hangman really did nothing wrong. He was trying to prevent him from winning the title because Swerve went after his family and him for months. So, look, I'm going to be happy when Swerve wins the title, whether it's a Dynasty or Double or Nothing. Maybe Hangman interferes, I don't know. But do I have any investment in him as a babyface? I really don't. On Rampage last week, Dustin Rhodes defeated The Butcher with Crossroads and Final Reckoning to open the show. This was built through that brief backstage promo on Dynamite prior. Then on Collision this week, he cut an emotional promo basically playing into the entire story that his brother Cody is doing in WWE, saying, without saying, that phrase that we all know, finish the story. He wants to win a world heavyweight title that he's coveted since he held Dusty's on his dining room table. He said Joe is under no obligation to give him a match, but if Joe had balls, he would do it. Joe later answered him saying he's not going to give him a title match, but he'll give him an eliminator match. Now, I didn't mind this concept. It's smart to put a Rhodes against a Samoan Joe when your competition is doing the same. Tongue in cheek at a minimum. But it did come off as kind of TNA. And what do I mean by that? So when someone does something notable, whether it's in WWE or AEW, TNA will very quickly jump on social media and tweet out like a highlight package or a signature match of that person to try and gain attention. Dustin literally had one victory over Butcher to build him for this. And if this is your plan, and they had time to plan because the title match, obviously, in WrestleMania was announced 2 months in advance, do a better job and don't just pull it out of your ass. So moving to Dynamite this week, we had Joe against Rhodes in that eliminator. This was set to open the show, except Swerve attacked during Joe's entrance, speared him through a table on the floor right by the side of the stage. It was eventually reset for the main event. Dustin cut a short promo. He bladed because, of course, he did. The referee had to stop him from using the title as a weapon. Dustin hit Crossroads for a false finish. Joe used the title behind the referee's back, got the 1-2-3. So the champion had to cheat to beat a 55-year-old 2 weeks before a main event title match at a pay-per-view. That was the booking here. Swerve caught Joe with a kick while he was doing a coquina clutch after the bell. He punched him in the face with a chain. They got separated, and Joe showed a shred of fear for the first time. Now, no one came out to separate them when Joe was beating the shit out of Swerve, but I digress. It's inconsistent. On Dynamite last week, Chris Jericho came out repeating that he wanted to mentor Hook before he introduced him. He asked him to believe in him and learn to trust him. Hook said he does believe in him, so he got them a match together and will keep his eye on him. Then they dapped up with Jericho saying Hook is learning already. I actually like the concept of this storyline. Jericho wanting to mentor someone, Hook being wary of him, just given his past, and Jericho being annoyed that he's not getting what he wants like usual. The problem is Hook has no charisma on the mic, and every segment between them is like endlessly boring and repetitive. Now, we learned immediately after this that Shane Taylor Promotions are the challengers. Somehow, they were prepared for this, despite Jericho calling Hook out of the blue, and only seconds later learning they had a match. I'll say that Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty, actually, they cut a pretty decent promo. So on Collision this week, Lion Hook beat STP in 8 minutes. Hook had an awesome suplex of Taylor, just given his size. Jericho tapped out Lee Moriarty. And then Anthony Ogogo returned to attack both of them in a trio with STP. This was his first appearance on actual AEW television since June 2021. 3 years. He did a ton of Dark when that existed. He did Rev Pro recently overseas. Let's see if he takes advantage of the second chance. I don't mind him with STP, but I mean, we'll see. Jericho backstage said he was pissed about the attack. Hook found Shibata and said they could be partners together and do a trios match. He agreed to join them using the text-to-voice app. Jericho dapped them up, and I like the Shibata phone gimmick. Like, he doesn't speak English, so give him a way to speak English. I think it's actually pretty cool. I do find it annoying, though, that he just gets randomly added to matches for really no reason whatsoever. On Dynamite this week, we had Lionhook and Shibata against STP. Jericho gave the guys instructions backstage in the form of a game plan. When he walked away, Shibata asked what was up with Jericho. Hook said to just trust him. There were some weird camera zooms in this segment as well. It killed my eyes. Jericho and Hook got into it, arguing about strategy outside, to the point that Jericho stopped Hook from being open for a tag, and Shibata ended up getting beaten by Moriarty, who has beaten nobody. So they jobbed Shibata here. So much for my praise of him getting the win previously. Hook demanded that Jericho leave, so he did. Wouldn't it have been smart to put a go-go over, given he's the new person returning? I don't know, maybe that's just me. On Rampage last week, Deonna Purrazzo defeated Rose, just her name, Rose, via submission, no build, no reason, non-rostered opponent, two women's matches on Rampage, neither mattered, one iota. On Collision last week, Thunder Rosa defeated Lady Frost via pinfall, no build, no reason, non-rostered opponent, Lone's women's match on Collision, didn't matter, one iota. Trends are not changing. Rosa did cut another promo into the camera. She said she's great. On Rampage last week, Toni Storm said she was injured and unable to compete, so Mariah May was taking her place as an understudy against a nobody. She won with Mayday. She's now 6-0, mostly against unimportant competition. Clearly, they're building her as a challenger. She was set to fight Thunder because they're the top two in the rankings. When Toni learned about this, she kissed Mariah, calling her a genius. On Dynamite last week, Rosa fought May. This was the main event with Storm on commentary. Thunder escaped Mayday and hit a Tijuana bomb for the win. For the top two contenders in the entire division, this match severely underdelivered. On Dynamite this week, Storm did a champagne toast for Rosa, her new challenger. She threw the champagne in her face and beat her. Then she tried and failed to wipe the makeup off. Purrazzo chased her back. Mariah came out for a match, so Toni took a sip of champagne and sucked her cheek with it. Then Mariah beat Anna Jay in 9 minutes. Anna was furious that Mariah caught her after Jay got a bunch of offense in during the match, so she was angry, put her in Queenslayer after the bell. Mira Shinakawa, I think her name is, ran in after the bell to no response because to the U.S. audience, even the AEW audience, she's a random Joshi from Stardom for whom they have no reason to cheer. Though, to be fair, a reason was given because Mira fed Mariah some champagne and then kissed her on the lips. May then picked her up and spun her around. Like, what the fuck was this? On Rampage, Serena D beat Trish Adora via submission in 10 minutes. No build, no reason, non-rostered opponent. I think she might be signed to Ring of Honor. I could be wrong about that, because she is part of the infantry. This was the lone women's match on Rampage, and it did not matter one iota. On Collision, Yuka Sakazawa beat Adora. This was a return, and few in the crowd knew who she was. They talked about her having an excursion in Japan. Maybe show a highlight package of that. Remember when Queen Aminata got that win and then just disappeared? Maybe they'll do the same thing with Adora, given she's the new jobber de jour. On Rampage last week, Bullet Club Gold invaded Billy Gunn's house and threw some shit around. No one was there, but AEW was on the TV. They were going to wreck some more shit, but Billy and his wife walked in, and they ran out of the house like scared children who got caught. It was kind of fun. Billy and Acclaimed entered on Collision with no rap, angry that BCG went into their house. Billy said he would fight Jay White next week and test him. Acclaimed dared everyone to stay away from the ring for the match. This segment was three times as long as it needed to be. It was excruciating. On Dynamite last week, White fought Gunn. Billy attacked Jay during his entrance. They fought into the crowd and ringside. Acclaimed got attacked backstage. Billy countered Blade Runner into one and only and two Famousers. The Guns then came in with a chair. Billy took a shot for a disqualification. Acclaimed saved. It got crazy ringside. And this was fucking atrocious. Despite the brawl in footage, despite Copeland's promo and Ospreay's promo, this was probably the worst thing I saw over the last 2 weeks. White got absolutely dominated by Billy, who then won by DQ. The booking of Jay White is fucking pathetic. I know I'm cursing a lot on this show, but it is just how I feel. This feud has been so extended that it's actually painful. Jay White is the paradigm of all of AEW's booking shortcomings and problems. He should be nowhere near any of this. Merge the titles at Dynasty, allow us to move on with all of our lives, allow them to move on with all of their lives. On Dynamite this week, White said he wanted a match on Collision, That's it. No opponent, just a match. Great stuff here. On Rampage last week, Angelo Parker and Zack Knight got into another backstage attack. Parker hit him with a steel pipe, only to turn around and see Ruby Soho angry that he fought him. So she kissed him and then walked away saying she can't be there for it. I guess the gimmick is that she likes him so much that she doesn't want to see him hurt and knows what this guy is capable of. But I mean, they're wrestlers. They fight for a living. It's nonsensical. It's a never-ending storyline, too. Then on Rampage this week, the whole Saraya Knight Harley Cameron trio had a strange segment where Harley basically felt Saraya up and Knight threatened Parker for like the eighth straight week. Match is going to happen next week. I just hope this ends soon, but there was really a lot of HLA on AEW these last 2 weeks. I'm not totally sure what's going on there. On Rampage, Daniel Garcia beat Action Andretti, Brian Keith, and Commander in what was termed a Final Four elimination match to promote the Final Four, as if folks watching Rampage at nearly 11 p.m. on a Friday night needed promotion for the Final Four. It was a fine match for promotional reasons. No business being in the main event other than the fact that I guess it was the most entertaining thing on that show. The only way it would have been worse is if Garcia lost. Luckily, he won. And then on Collision, Menard put Garcia over backstage, saying they want more. Garcia said being around the best wrestlers in the world motivates them, and he belongs in those conversations. I'm not sure if they're teaming or Menard is supporting Garcia in singles, but this was fine. All right, so looking in terms of the matches from AEW over the last 2 weeks that were built with storyline, not built with storyline, or built solely from a short promo saying, I want to fight you, and there not being an actual conflict behind it, this is really tough this week just because of how frequently that third category happened. So I gave some credit as actual build, the Adam Copeland matches. You know, one being a total open challenge, I counted that as something that had storyline build. There's a reason it happened that way. And the Penta one, because the match was so good and it mattered and they built Penta up a little bit, I gave that some credit as well. So I had 54% of matches, 12 of 22. I guess it's actually 55, it rounds up. 55% of matches having no storyline build whatsoever. Then I had 7 of 22, so less than a third, have legitimate storyline build. And again, that seven, that one third, includes tag team tournament matches that don't have build, they're just a tournament, both Copeland matches that really didn't have build. So you're looking at like five of those seven just didn't have build. And then three that were just, hey, I want to fight you. And then the match ends up happening on another show. So, I mean, that's rough. I mean, for a 2 week span, with the pay-per-view coming up in 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks now that we're taping this podcast, I mean, it's rough. It's tough to judge it compared to what they normally do, especially because there's a tournament ongoing. You got to be fair when it comes to tournaments. You got to be fair when it comes to open challenges, things like that. But it certainly wasn't an improvement. It was basically the same shit is what is fair to say about it. So look, folks, that is the last 2 weeks of AEW. Those are my thoughts, obviously, on Tony Khan, the Brawl In footage, Will Ospreay, Adam Copeland, you heard previously and a little bit here. It's just been a rough 2 weeks for AEW. Dynasty is going to be a great show. I have no doubt. Their pay-per-views are usually a banger. You know, am I going to buy it? We've been talking about this on the podcast that it's come to the point where maybe we just can't suggest people buy every single AEW pay-per-view. They did announce a new schedule. They're going to do 9 total this year. They have 8 more to go over the remaining months. It's already mid-April, and they're going to do 8 more shows before the end of the year. You know, I'm going to have to see the entire Dynasty card. Certain matches, like the Trios match involving Copeland, Briscoe, and Kingston, like makes me not be interested in getting the card. And then, of course, you have Bryan Danielson and Will Ospreay and the chance that Swerve Strickland wins the title. And you're like, well, I kind of want to see those things, right? So we'll talk more about this next week when we cover everything that happens in AEW across one episode of Rampage, one episode of Collision, and one episode of Dynamite. Can't wait to get back to that. Of course, our next show will be on Tuesday where we talk all things WWE. Folks, wow, it has been quite a journey over these last 2 weeks. 2 WWE episodes in the books for you this week. Make sure you listen to both of them if you missed them. Obviously, our WWE WrestleMania 40 instant analysis episodes. Of course, the NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis episode. A ton of stuff over the last few weeks. We have some irons in the fire for interviews. The Silver King, as you can tell, is losing his voice. I gotta go to sleep, folks. Let's go ahead and wrap this up here at the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast.
It's all about Defy.
So head on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple. Take a little extra time. leave a 5-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. Please also remember,
I happen to love the number 5.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Overhead. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover, sign up, you'll get bonus audio, instant reactions to the major wrestling shows, and exclusive news posts every Friday. Again, buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. It is now officially time to wrap up a wild 2 weeks here at the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast. For the Silver King and the Silver King alone, it is, of course, yours truly, leaving you with 3 final words. Bye for now.